Welcome to DSC's Campfires with Larry Wysoon. The unique blend of hunting, conservation, and the outdoor lifestyle delivered in an entertaining, informative fashion that only a veteran outdoorsman can do. DSC Campfires is brought to you by DSC, the Dallas Safari Club, Conservation, Education, and Hunter Advocacy, Hornady, Accurate, Deadly, Dependable, Trigicon, Brilliant Aiming Solutions, Ruger, Rugged, Reliable Firearms, Burnham Brothers Game Calls, The Callingest Call Made, Double Nickel Taxidermy, where hunting memories are preserved. Now here's your host, Larry Wysoon.
Thank you, David Fox, for that introduction. Before we get into today's campfire, we have a special anniversary, if you will, or a special event coming up here toward the very beginning of July. We are going to be doing our 100th episode of what started out as DSC's Untamed Heritage, which has now become DSC's Campfires with Larry Wysoon. To commemorate this, I'm going to give away one of my custom knives. These are very limited edition. They have my name inscribed upon the blade. The scales of this particular knife that we're giving away is made from the horn of a buffalo that I shot in Australia. Now, all you have to do to enter the drawing is to go to my Instagram page. That is at Larry Wysoon Outdoors, and there leave a comment as to anything having to do with DSC's campfires, and we'll get you entered, and then we'll draw a name on the 5th of July. The 5th of July, then we'll be in touch with you right after that. So wish you the very best, and thank you for joining us all these many episodes, and then about time now that we got into the one that we got set up for you today. Welcome to the 100th episode of DSC's Campfires with Larry Wysoon. And David, thank you for that kind introduction. DSC Campfires. Actually, we started out as Untamed Heritage, DSC's Untamed Heritage, and had some absolutely fantastic times under that title, and over a period of time decided to change it to really kind of what we do, and that's often to sit around campfires, either real campfires or maybe a pretend or virtual campfire when you get right down to it. Wanted to rename it to that because there's something to be said about sitting down in front of a fire. It seemed like whether there's a fireplace in a home or a camp or a campfire out in the backyard or campfire in a hunting camp, kind of loosens the tongue. It kind of makes people reflect on a lot of things of the past and kind of how the day's events went, and telling stories about old friends and things that you've done and things that you want to do in the future. And I think that was one of the reasons that we really decided to call this Campfires. Truly proud of that title. I've been doing a campfire talk radio show with Luke Clayton for about 13 years now, and we've had more than a few hundred episodes when you look right at it from that perspective. But I'm so very proud of the fact that we now have our 100th episode of DSC's Campfires. And thought we'd take the time a little bit to kind of go out to my little place, sit underneath a big old oak tree that kind of grew up around. The property I have has been in the family for over 150 years now, I guess. And so a lot of things have happened. It's where I started hunting. Roamed the woods as a freckled-faced, red-headed, barefooted kid, and kind of where I am today. I remember coming down where I'm sitting at the moment and sitting here and just dreaming about some of the things that I really wanted to do back then. I'd looked at every outdoor life field, the stream, sports field, and Red O'Connor and Russell Annabelle, and I mean, the list just goes on and on. Elmer Keith and a whole lot more, and they tell about the adventures they'd had in the Southwest and in the far North and in the foreign lands as well, too. And always dreaming about the fact that one of these days, one of these days, I'm going to get to go do some of those kind of things. And Never really thought that that might happen, but I've been very fortunate and blessed over the last many years to have traveled the world. I've hunted some absolutely fantastic places, spent time with some of the best people in the world who became very, very dear friends. And some of those friends I get to see frequently, and some I see infrequently, and some I haven't seen in years, but I don't feel any less about them now than even the fact that we haven't shared a campfire now, maybe in 20, 30 years when you get right down to it. Had a lot of influences in my life, going back to where my grandfather, Grandpa A.J. Aschenbeck, he was a county commissioner. We lived out in the country on the property I'm on right now, and he would come by every morning, seemed like, and we'd go dig for worms, take an old grubbing hoe and go dig earthworms. And for the most part, almost every time we did that, we went fishing. Never caught anything big, but my gosh, we caught lots of little sunfish, occasional little bass, little catfish, but I long for those days so much when there was a time when maybe he couldn't. And unfortunately, he passed away when I was 9 years old. And to this day, you know, I really do miss those times that I got to spend with him, and whether we were fishing or telling stories or anything having to do with anything with the outdoors. My mom and dad both hunted. My dad hunted hounds and loved coon hunting. Always loved hounds, always loved horses. And Grandpa Wysoon loved horses. Wasn't much on hunting, but he expected us to hunt his properties if we wanted to, kind of thing. And we were fortunate he had several relatively small places scattered around that didn't really have any deer back then to speak of, but he had a lot of squirrels and rabbits, and we hunted deer nonetheless. But you know, those things were the early years of grabbing a BB gun. I think I got my first BB gun, air rifle, if you will, when I was like 3 years old, 4 years old. Got my first .22 rifle that I used from my granddad, Grandpa Osterbeck, about the time that I was five. And by the time of that age, I was already roaming the woods. And by the time I got to be six, seven, and eight, there was no time that I didn't spend in the woods when we didn't have chores. And we were in the chicken business, the cattle business, and the hog business. And so there were always chores way before daylight, and get ready just in time for school, and go to school, come home and work, and try to get everything done, and hopefully have a few minutes before you could go out in the woods, go hunting or fishing. When I started school, I frankly thought I'd died and gone to hell. I mean, up until that time, I had free reign of quite a few acres and creeks and things of that nature, and all of a sudden, I was stuck in a classroom and never really liked school, to be very frank with you. And it wasn't probably until my senior year at Texas A&M that kind of realized that, hey, school actually was important. But I did know this much, that by going to Texas A&M, I wanted to become a wildlife biologist and had worked with veterinarians, wanted to learn things about animals as much as I could. And of course, grew up around animals and hunting animals and all those kind of things. And was very fortunate way back when, while I was a senior at Texas A&M, to go to work for the Wildlife Disease Project with Dr. Mick Robinson, who headed up the Wildlife Disease Project, as I mentioned. And it was a contract between the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department and the Texas A&M's Department of Veterinary Pathology. And very frankly, in working with Dr. Robinson and biologist named Rod Marburger, who was the state's counterpart of Dr. Robinson in Texas Parks and Wildlife Department, learned more from them about wildlife and I suspect almost about life when it comes to having anything to do with wildlife in about 6 weeks than I actually learned during the time when I was attending classes at Texas A&M. But I knew if I were going to be able to do what I wanted to do in the future, I would have to have a degree. And I have to say, God bless my wife, because as I mentioned, I wasn't big on school. Kind of hated school, quite frankly. And every day it seemed like, we got married when we were after our freshman year, and seemed like every day I'd come home to college housing when we were in A&M, and I'd say, okay, that's it. Pack your stuff. We're out of here. I've had all this I can stand. I don't want to do this anymore. But she'd go, well, you know, every cent we've got is invested in books and this month's rent, and you know where you want to go. And she taught me how to quit in college, thankfully, and so I ended up being a wildlife biologist with the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department for a while. I came along at a time when all this interest in white-tailed deer was first getting started. Did a lot of the white-tailed deer research to start with. Got to be friends with guys like Al Brothers and Murphy Ray and a bunch of other people that were very much involved in the front of the
what came to be the kind of the whitetail world, I guess you could say. Got to be friends with John Wooders, who was a prominent writer at the time and a Texan, and Jerry Smith. Jerry Smith was a photographer down in Alice, Texas, and he started photographing material whitetail deer, something nobody'd ever seen in magazines. With all due respect to Lenny Lee LaRue, the third, fourth, or fifth, whichever that one was, that, you know, they photographed a lot of whitetail, and those whitetail appeared in a lot of the publications, but they were always yearling and two-year-old deer because they did not have access to those deer that rode or that grew big antlers. So when Jerry started photographing those, John Wooders started writing about hunting mature deer, and it really kind of opened the world as far as whitetail deer hunting is concerned. And along the way, Murphy Ray and Al Brothers wrote the book, Producing Quality Whitetail, and didn't take long after that, the Dixie Deer Classic started, and then organizations like Texas Trophy Hunter Association, and later on the Quality Deer Management Association, guys like David Morris and Stephen Vaughn and Chuck Larson started the North American Whitetail, and guys like Dick Idle, and, you know, I got to know and spend time around all these people, and particularly in some of the times when I was doing a lot of writing at the time, but I was also working as a wildlife biologist, and two, I was very fortunate to be one of the speakers with the NRA's Great American Hunters Tour, where we traveled across the country doing seminars, and mine were pretty much about the basics of whitetail deer in terms of hunting, in terms of habitat, in terms of habits, and so I got to meet some really fantastic people and got to hunt some really great country. During these last 100 episodes, we've talked a lot about those kind of things. I've had guys on like Gary Robertson. Gary is a very dear friend who owns Burnham Brothers Game Calls, and he's come up with a call that absolutely duplicates the sounds that distressed rabbits, rats, mice, all those things actually make, to where he can record it and to where he can then to also broadcast it. He's got the patent on that, and I've had the chance to hunt with Gary several times on properties where they said, well, you can't call coyotes here anymore. They're so used to these electronic calls, they won't respond. And Gary'd go out and, I mean, just sack them up. But for the first time now, those animals have really hearing the same thing that the real animals make. And so that's made a difference. We've had Gary on several times. And, you know, looking into the future, I really intend to have Gary on a little bit more. He, like me, loves to hunt. He loves to hunt coyotes a whole lot more than I do, and I like to hunt them a lot. Same thing with bobcats, and also loves to hunt deer and other big game species, particularly with his hounds, like for mountain lion and black bear. You know, that's going back to, I mentioned earlier, my dad ran hounds. He ran coon hounds primarily, and then he got into fox hunting. And during the years when I was at A&M and right out of school and working as a biologist, we were taking his coon hounds because I really wanted to hunt black bear. We were taking his coon hounds, and you could buy bear scent, and we would essentially just douse those poor coons that we caught in bear scent and turn them loose. And over a relatively short period of time, we developed a pretty good set of hounds. My dad and my cousin Crockett Leindecker, first cousin Crockett Leindecker, and hunted with Crockett in New Mexico, and there shot my first black bear, which was one of those cornerstones of life. I'd read so much about Davy Crockett and a lot of the other guys that hunted black bear, people that hunted black bear in the area where I live now, where we now do not have black bear, just simply because there are too many humans around. But shot that first black bear, and that opened up the door to a lot of different things as well, too. And point where I dearly love hunting bear, and I've called them in, I've spotted and stalked and all those others, and we've talked a little bit about that as well, too. And love bear, particularly the grizzlies and the brown bear, and I've had a chance to hunt those in the past, and we'll revisit some of those hunts a little bit in the future, because moving forward, I don't want to ever forget where I came from. I don't want to ever forget in terms of stories that I recall, of things that I've learned. And you know, years ago, I talked with Gary Larson about this. He said, you know, who did you spend time around when you were a youngster? And I said, for the most part, I spent time around older guys who told stories, who had had experiences of the past. And I learned so much from them. Sometimes I learned what to do. Sometimes I learned what not to do because of the experiences I had. And he said, you know, I was kind of the same way. He said, I love spending time with friends that were my age when we'd go out hunting. He said, but, you know, those guys, like me, really didn't know a whole lot. So it was much more important for me to spend time around people that really kind of knew what they were talking about. And I think that's the case with me, or I know that's the case with me as well, too. You know, I appreciate all the technology that we have when it comes to, like, TVs and phones and all this, but I'll tell you something. Something to be said about sitting on the back porch with a bunch of guys that are 15, 20, 30, 40, 50 years older than you are and listening to their stories and learning particularly about hunting, about wildlife, around livestock, or at the habitat. And in doing so, a lot of times you learn a little bit about yourself and learn a little bit about life as well, too. Don't ever want to get away from that. Storytelling is so very important. And again, that's one of the reasons we decided to call the podcast DSC's Campfires. And it's really not about me. It's not about Larry Wyson. It's about the many people that I've met and what I've learned from some of those people. Kind of what we were talking about earlier. We're sitting around and listening to the old guys. And, you know, it always amazes me in that respect is I can remember for the longest time always being the youngest guy in the hunting camp. And then it looked like all of a sudden somebody flipped a switch and I went from being the youngest guy there to generally the oldest guy in camp. Got dear old friends like Jim Zumbo that I've had on the podcast and will again in the future. And I used to kid Jim all the time. I said, thank God you and I are friends and we hunt together, because all of a sudden now I'm no longer the oldest guy in hunting camp. Jim Zumbo is. But again, there's so much to be learned from guys like him and Rick Lambert, who between the Zumbo and Lambert and I, we kind of call ourselves the Three Amigos. And up until the time that COVID hit, where we couldn't get out and about, there wasn't hardly a 2-month period of time that we didn't go hunting somewhere, do something together. And with all this stuff kind of fading into the background, hopefully now, I'm really hoping and praying that we'll be able to do some of that same thing. I really enjoy their company, and I learned so much from those guys. It's amazing. Old friends like J. Wayne Fears, who I've not had on the podcast, but J. Wayne and I did so many things together. He was still is a very prolific writer and one of the most fantastic storytellers I've ever been around. And he lives in Alabama, and I live in Texas, and unfortunately have not had a time to really get over and spend some time with him. But that's one of the things I really hope to do in the future is I need to make a trip to the southeast and spend a little time around the campfire with Fears and with two or three other guys over there too, like Bill Miller, who for years was the editor of North American Hunter and the North American Hunter TV show. And over the years, he and I developed the You Call the Shot thing, which was for the longest time one of the most popular things on outdoor television and within the magazines as well, too. And I understand old buddy Jim Shockey now with a new show called Shock Therapy or something like that. I was visiting with Jim not too long ago at one of the DSC conventions, probably about 2 years ago, and we were telling stories about how we came about to coming up with the You Call the Shot. And, you know, he said, I remember, he said, you and Miller kind of got together at the first North American Hunting Club Jamboree and talked about what we could do to entertain the crowd. And thankfully, you called me and between the three of us, we showed different hunting scenarios, stop it, and discuss kind of what everybody would do. And then we'd take turns telling what we thought needed to be done and whether you'd take the shot or not. And he said, you know what? He said, with this new TV show I'm doing, he said, I'm gonna go back and do some of those things. And so I haven't had a chance to see the show. I don't get a chance to watch TV very much. But I suspect Shockey is indeed doing the You Call the Shot. And there's a lot of value in that, a lot of learning. It's kind of like the storytelling I was talking about earlier. 100th episode, my gosh, we've done this weekly now, and the 100th episode, that means a little right at 2 years. To start with, we were going to do a podcast. Ken Milam and I, Ken and I worked on it together for about the first 6-8 months, and we decided we were going to try to do it every other week, and then I got to visit with some people a little bit, and they said, why don't you just do it every week? And so I talked to Ken, and Ken said, man, he said, I just really don't have the time to devote that much time where I can do it every week. But, you know, he said, if you'd like to continue doing so, he said, I got all this radio stuff, and then Dave's doing a couple other podcasts as well along the same time that we were doing, started this one. He said, why don't you just go ahead and take it over? And I didn't stutter too long or stammer too long to say yes, because really kind of where I wanted to go as well when I first started this is to, once we get established, let's go to a weekly, let's go to telling stories, let's go to visiting a bunch with guys like Corey Mason, Corey's a wildlife biologist with tremendous experience in the state of Texas and elsewhere, and as now the executive director of the Dallas Safari Club, his experience has extended extremely beyond Texas to the world. He's one of those guys who is extremely well-spoken, who has a great sense of wildlife in terms of habitat, in terms of management, in terms of wildlife conservation, has the ability to communicate with almost anybody on those subjects. And as a result of that, has been very instrumental in getting a lot of different things done through ICUN and the CITES permit things and all those kind of things that affect us. In a recent one, we talked a little bit about, you know, black bear, and I say, you know, black bear, because black bear are found throughout North America, probably as many bear now as there have been in a long, long time. Maybe not in historic times or prehistoric times, but for the most part, we've had a tremendous resurgence of black bear throughout North America, and it's one of those animals that's controlled by the CITES permits. So it's one of those things you say, well, all those things they're doing over there in Africa and elsewhere, you know, that doesn't affect me. I don't hunt Africa. Well, I don't hunt this, or I don't hunt with hounds, or I don't hunt with this, or I don't do that. You know, but yes, the fact is, we're all in this together. And what happens in Africa right now, particularly with some of the European-type countries and the people who are, or maybe anti-hunters more than anything else, and I really don't want even the local countries or the immediate countries where these wildlife animals or wildlife species exist to set up a management program. So hopefully through the efforts of DSC, and of course there are a lot of other organizations out there as well, really top-notch organizations as well, but one of the things that Corey mentioned in a recent podcast is we need to get more organizations involved in these things to where we have a greater voice and we can have more people involved in helping making decisions, and decisions made upon true biological facts rather than hysteria and sustained use of those animals, if you will, and habitat. We've shown so many different times that when there isn't value or some kind of value in terms of hunting on animals, those animals have a way of disappearing because the locals kill them out or the habitat's destroyed or so many different factors come into play, but there's not an economic value there. So it's important that we continue that, and it's important that we have guys like Corey Mason and other representatives from the DSC and other organizations, and guys like Jeff Crane with the Congressional Sportsman's organization here in the USA to keep these people informed. And it's so very important that you let your congressman and you let your senator, your state, local, and federal know how you feel about things. Send them a short little thank you note when they do something good. If you want them to oppose a bill, send them an email, send them a phone call. But learned really that recently, even with all the technology that we have in terms of getting information or getting a message to somebody, that one of the best messages sent still is a short note, handwritten, so it's real. It doesn't come from a robot. It's not the same message over and over again sent to these individuals who make the laws, who actually represent us, and they need to represent us in terms of how we truly feel about things, and not just a small group. But so get messages to those who make the decisions. That's something that we're going to continue to try to come back to as we head into the next 100, 200, 300, 400, however many of these we're going to be able to do over the next several years. One of the things about hunting and the outdoors, too, is to be so very important is to have fun. You know, to me, I like to learn everything I can about the species, everything I can about the habitat that I'm hunting. I want to learn about the people that hunt them. I want to learn about the culture that's involved around the hunting in a particular area. All those things to me are such much fun. and they make me a better person. They make me a better hunter. They make me a little bit more understanding of what's going on in the real world. If you have the opportunity, attend the outdoor shows. There's none finer than the VSC convention, whatever we want to call it, every year in January. And you can learn more about that and membership on VSC, as we've said so many times, by going to www.biggame.org. And, you know, those particular, and again, I say you know because we've talked about all this in the past, but that convention, there are people there from all over the world. There's every kind of country represented where there is any substantial wildlife left, organizations, and it's a great place to get to know people. If you've ever thought about hunting someplace or want to know more about someplace, it's a place to go because you can get it firsthand. You can get it from the people's mouths, if you will, that live there, that have experienced those situations that you might be interested in, experienced the cultures, experienced the hunting that is available, not just in your backyard, but, you know, that backyard can extend truly throughout the world. Moving into the future, we're going to spend a little bit more time on wildlife management. I've got several guests lined up moving forward about to talk about different species, and one of those that will probably be on the air occasionally is Brian Fenhold, who is the COO of the Mule Deer Foundation. Brian is an absolutely fantastic person to know and is so very knowledgeable in terms of mule deer and knows the right people who can answer the mule deer questions. Though mule deer is kind of taking it on the chin a little bit here the last several years due to habitat changes, due to increases in predation. Lots of factors working on the mule deer, and hopefully through the efforts of the Mule Deer Foundation and other organizations as well, that animal can be at least maintained and hopefully not necessarily reintroduced, because almost everywhere where there are mule deer now, there were mule deer in the past kind of thing, but we need to perpetuate that mule deer herd in terms of improving the habitat, improving a lot of things that they have to deal with on a day-to-day basis. Mule deer have a tendency to be migratory outside of some of the desert mule deer subspecies, so we need to maintain corridors so they can go from the high country in the spring and summer and early fall to the low country where there's food available. Migration is a mystery in a lot of ways, but in other ways it's not. If the animals simply migrate and go to the areas where there's food, when that food plays out, then they go back into the areas where they started from, kind of like some of those mule deer in western Wyoming. They may travel 75 to 100 miles. Some of them may only travel 2 or 3 miles to where to go from high country to the low country, but there is movement, and what's happened in a lot of those areas is we have highways, major highways. Well, thanks to efforts of the Mule Deer Foundation and money's provided through a lot of different individuals and people and organizations such as our DSC Foundation, which is a granting arm of DSC, we've been able to provide some funds where they can put some overpasses, underpasses, kind of put a high fence along a certain area to channeling animals to a particular point where they can cross over the highways or under the highways. And that's saving a lot of animals, and it's saving some human problems as well, too, in terms of damage to both humans and to vehicles. So a little bit more of those kind of things. Learn what you can. You know, I really push hard for people to be members of the DSC, the Dallas Safari Club. And we've got several different levels of membership. And we've had guys like Carson Keyes, who handles the chapters, and Nate Watson. These both young men. Nate handles the membership side of things. But those guys are great sources, and they're going to be around for a long time when it comes to DSC, when it comes to having to do anything with wildlife. They're so totally ingrained in understanding conservation. They, too, can be great, great sources. One of the things I, too, want to do as we move forward a little bit in the next episodes, I've got some absolutely fantastic hunts coming up, and we're going to do some of those, and fishing trips, because I do enjoy fishing, but we're going to do some of those kind of in the field at the moment kind of thing, where we're on an elk hunt, and maybe we'll be able to hear the elk bugling in the background. Through the graciousness of the Mescalero Apache Reservation in southern New Mexico, we have an elk hunt coming up that was sold at the DSC Foundation Gala earlier in July. And I'm going to be hosting that hunt, and I'm going to be trying while I'm there as well, too, to help this guy that bought it shoot the very biggest elk that we can find there. But I'm going to be there long enough, too, to where I suspect he'll shoot an elk in the first, second, or third day. And while we're there, I'm going to try to be hunting for a big, mature 4x4 or 5x5 or, you know, a bull that really doesn't have the big antlers whose genetics they hopefully want that animal to pass on to future generations. So we're going to try to set it up where we'll have a cameraman with us the entire time, and basically he is going to be filming for Trigicon's World of Sports of Field. I have essentially turned over my old show, the DSC's, now it's just called Trailing the Hunter's Moon, that Blake Barnett for years was involved with me on in a lot of different capacities. Gave that show to Blake about 2 years ago, and Blake's taking it over, and so I'm going to be spending a little bit more time now hunting for Trigicon's World of Sports at Field with the Safari Classics. I do a lot with those guys in terms of helping promote DSC and the DSC Foundation, and graciously they've decided that they're going to allow me to be filmed for some of the hunts that we have planned this year, and that Mescalero Apache Reservation elk hunt is one of them, so hopefully we'll have be mic'd up where you can hear the elk in the background as we slip up close to it, and then we'll spend some time interviewing the guys involved in the management out there, maybe some time with the hunter who takes the elk that we hopefully will be taken, or he will be taken. And then we're kind of doing the same thing with pronghorn antelope on the Eastern Ranch in central New Mexico, and kind of put you there in the moment. A gentleman there again bought that hunt, and this one, he and I will both be hunting antelope, so we're going to try to give you that moment-to-moment thing of what's going on, and then some of the mule deer hunts that I've got going on here in Texas, and whitetail hunts as well, too. And you know, and then too, we're filming some things as well, not just for Trigicon's World of Sports Field, but I do deal with a little digital show called Sportsman's Life that I do with Jeff Rice and Lou Clayton, both longtime buddies, and that's available on the Pride Outdoor Network as well as on on YouTube and Facebook, a bunch of places. And so all those we're going to be filming for and having a good time. And so not only do you hear me talking about them here on the podcast, talking about the hunts and some of the things we did and accomplished and failed to accomplish, maybe, but all the time having a good time, you'll also be able to see on Trigicon's World of Sports and Field, which is on the Sportsman Channel, and then A Sportsman's Life that is on Pride Outdoor Network through Roku and a bunch of other things. So trying to cover as many bases as we can. I'd write a fair amount of blogs as well, too. I usually do about 16 to 20 blogs a month, and those go to DSC, Trigicon, Hornady, and Carbon TV as well, too. They graciously publish my blogs there as well, and you might be able to see them a few other places, too. So a lot of different ways, and try to coordinate those somewhat as much as I can between this podcast and then too, Luke and I do the weekly radio show that I mentioned earlier called Campfire Talk, and that we've been doing now for over 13 years, and he and I also do every other week Hunting Wire Radio, in which we cover lots of territory, and that can be found on huntingwire.com and the Facebook and the all those kind of sites where you can access that, and we're still doing some things for Sporting Classics as well, and in terms of a weekly podcast there, and then I do a lot of writing for Sporting Classics now again as well too, in articles. Years ago I wrote a column for Sporting Classics called The Long Hunter, which means the guy that goes out a long distance and hunts, not the long hunter in terms of shooting long distances, but vision a little bit right now about the possibility of doing another book that might be, well, entitled The Long Hunter. You know, and talking about books, I just wrote a foreword for Greg Simons. Greg has got a new book coming out about the hunting business, and we'll talk more about that here in the next several episodes about how that came to be, and a little bit more about some of the things that you can find in there. But having read the chapters on several of those chapters before I wrote the foreword, I can tell you it's an absolutely fantastic book, whether you're interested in the hunting business per se, or whether you're simply a weekend hunter or a wannabe hunter or somebody who doesn't even like hunting but loves wildlife. That book is one that's going to be there for the ages. Greg did an absolutely fantastic job on that. if I do another hunting book, and which will, as I say, likely be titled The Long Hunter, I hope I can do the quality of work that Greg did in the book that he's putting out. One of these days, still want to go back maybe to Africa. I really want to go back to Europe. I got to where I really truly enjoyed hunting Europe over the years that I've been there. I love the traditions involved with hunting in Europe. I love the respect that's paid to the game that's taken, to the habitat, and to the hunter himself for being a good steward of the land and the good steward of the wildlife and truly being involved in wildlife conservation, which to me means the wise use of. Conserving means you use it properly. It's not a preservation. You preserve things and they stalemate and they go to heck. But if you truly manage through wildlife conservation, where, again, is the wise use of wildlife habitats and wildlife itself, evolved varieties from the butterflies that I dearly love watching out on my place to the songbirds to the squirrels, rabbits, all the little things up until the larger big game that exists here. And the vegetation itself, sitting here underneath a big live oak tree that's been around probably for about, 500-600 years, I'm guessing. And right off to the side is a little wild plum tree that's been there since I can remember, and not too far away is what we call Bordeaux, a Bois d'Arc, if you want to spell it that way, and one of the better deer browsers for the part of Texas I live in, and which is manifest itself. If you look, you can't find a leaf, even though our deer population is not that high, you cannot find a leaf where a deer can reach it. So it tells me they dearly love that. And every time I can pick up one of those horse apples anywhere, I throw it on the back of the pickup and carry it back to my place and dig a little shallow hole and drop that big seed in there and hopefully, produce some more Bordeaux plants. What I'm doing with my place, and we'll talk more about it in the future, and we've talked about some in the past, and you've even been able to listen to the raindrops falling on the old camp, the old tin roof here not too very long ago, but really want to bring this property back to what it was a few years ago, a bunch of years ago, in terms when we had an abundance of wildlife. We've lost our bobwhite quail due to many factors, including pesticides, herbicides, overgrazing, fire ants, predation, all those things have played a role in the removal of the bobwhite quail in this area, particularly as they started kind of going downhill a little bit in terms of populations, and drought played into that as well, too. So lots of factors. I know we're not probably going to be able to bring it back. Country used to have black bear and wild turkeys, and I doubt seriously that we'll have black bears and wild turkeys here as well going into the future, at least not the near future, but in the process of managing this property properly with grazing on occasion and removing the cattle for a while in certain areas, doing some planting of native species that are good browse species that are fruit and seed producers for all wildlife. I love watching birds, and as we have started doing our management program here to try to improve the habitat primarily for white-tailed deer, it truly amazes me the cottontails have come back, the jackrabbits have come back, birds of all different species that I've not seen out here in years are starting to come back. And we're doing this under the auspices of trying to improve it for white-tailed deer, but in truth the fact is we're improving it for all wildlife, and as a result the habitat has improved tremendously. And believe me, that's what makes the difference. If you got good habitat, all these other animals, as long as you can get a little bit of help out of your neighbors, and I'm fortunate here that I lease some of the adjoining property, and some of the adjoining property, too, belongs to my brother, and he, too, is very much into wildlife, although he's more of a cattleman than he is on the biologist side, but he understands, because he loves to hunt, he loves wildlife, the importance of proper grazing in certain times. So we're going to try to improve this, and we'll talk about some of the things that you can do on your little piece of property, whether it's a monstrous ranch or whether it's just a backyard, because if you have a place where you can grow a plant, be it a flower, be it a fruit, be it whatever, you can contribute to wildlife, the perpetuation of wildlife as well, by providing that little maybe 6-inch square of 2 or 3 flowers that bees and other pollinators like. Or if you got a backyard and they're deer and they're eating some of the plants that you plant, well, guess what, the deer were there first, and you can learn how to keep them out of there at certain times by putting up a little old fence, kind of a little enclosure, maybe electrical fence, and maybe even applying some elements, if you will, not so much chemicals to discourage them from eating them. But all those things are part of what we've kind of talked about in the past 100 episodes and kind of talking about where we're going to go in the next 100, like I said, maybe 200, maybe 300. One of the things that I would ask you to do is our podcast is available through all kinds of places. You can go to it directly at www.waypoint, that's WayPointTV, so waypointtv.com/DSCS-campfire. And that'll get you to see all 100 or most of the 100 episodes that we've done and give us a chance to kind of go back and if you want to review some of the things that we've talked about. And if you haven't heard them, maybe you want to go back and listen to them. There's a lot of information in there. Some of it's just campfire tales sitting around the fire. Some of it's providing a tremendous amount of data, if you will, that you can utilize in a lot of different ways to improve wildlife or to improve your outdoor experience. And again, that's kind of where we want to head in the future. So you can go to waypointtv.com. It's also available at pursuituptv.com and under the podcast. And we're probably going to be having a few more places, but it's available pretty much anywhere where you can access the podcast. Now, if you'd like to get a message to me personally, and really hope that you do, because I'd love to hear what you think about the podcast. And don't forget, on the Monday after this is aired, we will be drawing for one of the knives that's made out of a knife kind of my design, a limited edition, if you will, because of the fact that it does have my signature on the blade. And also the scales are made from an Australian buffalo that I shot a few years ago. And we're going to give one of those away to, based on a drawing of anyone who submits a comment about this podcast or about DSC's Campfires with Larry Wyson podcast. And they can do that by going to my Instagram site, which is Larry Wyson Outdoors. That's LarryWeishunOutdoors. And you can leave a message there. And if you're not on Instagram, you can also go to Larry Wyson Outdoors on Facebook and leave a message. And about the time this thing is finished airing, we're going to be drawing, as I said, right after, I think it's July the 5th, we're going to be drawing a knife for whoever wins that knife. And I'll probably try to send some notes to those people who also maybe did not win, and we'll figure out something else that we can do down the way. Maybe keep your names in a pot for another knife that we'll give away, or maybe some hunting gloves, or who knows what we might be doing along those lines in the future. But what I really want to do this morning before I sign off here is just to remind you to get in touch with me at Larry Wyson Outdoors on Instagram or Larry Wyson Outdoors Facebook page and kind of let me know what you think about the podcast. But truly, 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 I want to thank each and every one of you who has listened to the podcast, and particularly those of you who told others about our podcast. Without you, this podcast doesn't exist, quite frankly. It's words that nobody hears. It's like going into the forest where there's not another human soul around for 100 miles and shouting, "Help me!" And chances of somebody coming to help you in that situation don't exist. Well, at this point, what I really would like for you to do, if you don't mind, is to just continually tell other people about our podcast and direct them where they can get it. It's available almost anywhere where you can find podcasts, and particularly you can go back and get past episodes and listen to the current episode, as I said, at waypointtv.com and then the slash with DSCS-campfires. And tell them to go right there or to pursuituptv.com, either one as well. And hopefully they'll find something there that kind of trips their trigger a little bit, and maybe we can provide a little information. But again, too, I really want to hear from y'all out there to let me know what you want to hear about or what you don't want to hear about. Without knowing that for sure, I don't know sometimes the directions to head, but Again, thank you, each and every one of you, for helping me get to this 100th episode. Again, without you, it couldn't have possibly happened. Thank you very much. We'll be back right here next week, maybe underneath the same old tree where I'm sitting this morning, and telling a few campfire stories. And so please join me right back here next week on DSC's Campfires with Larry Wysand. Thank y'all.
Thanks for joining us around the campfire. To leave a comment or suggestion for an upcoming episode, go to Instagram at Larry Wysoon Outdoors. Please join me right here next week for another DSC's Campfires.
DSC's Campfires with Larry Wysoon has also been brought to you by Texas Wildlife Association, working for tomorrow's wildlife today. Texas-raised hunting products, the Scent Gods, Kitatrek Boots for the trails less traveled, Boyt, the finest in hunting gear, Pyramid Air for all things air gun, and Ripcord Rescue Travel Protection.